Chapter 48. Spirit of the pities, what do I see but thirsty, throbbing bands from these anemic hosts defiling down in homely need towards the little stream that parts their enmities, and drinking there. They get two grasping hands across the rill, sealing their sameness as Earth's sojourners. What more could plead the wryness of the time than such unstudied piteous pantomimes? Spirit ironic, it is only that life's queer mechanics chance to work out in this grotesque shape just now. The groping tentativeness of an imminent will, as Gray Old Ears describes it, cannot be asked to learn logic at this time of day. The spectacle of its instruments, set to riddle one another through, and then to drink together in peace and concord, is where the humor comes in, and makes the play worth seeing. Spirit sinister, come, sprite, don't carry your ironies too far, or you may wake up the unconscious itself, and tempt it to let all the gory clockwork of the show run down to spite me. Dumb show, continuing, the drums roll, and the men of the two nations part from their comradeship at the Albertsbrook, the dark masses of the French army assembling anew. Sir Arthur Wellesley has seated himself on a mound that commands a full view of the contested hill, and remains there motionless a long time. When the French form for battle, he is seen to have come to a conclusion. He mounts, gives his orders, and the aides ride off. The French advance steadily through the sultry atmosphere, the skirmishers in front, and the columns after, moving, yet seemingly motionless. Their 80 cannon peal out and their shots mow every space in the line of them. Up the great valley and the terraces of the hill whose fame is at that moment being woven, comes Villette, boring his way with foot and horse, and Ruffin's men following behind. According to the order given, the 23rd Light Dragoons and the German Hussars advance at a chosen moment against the head of these columns. On the way they disappear. Spirit of the pities, why this bedevilment? What can have chanced? Spirit of rumor, it so befalls that as their chargers near the inimical wall of flesh with its iron fries, a treacherous chasm uptrips them. Zealous men and docile horses roll to dismal death and horrid mutilation. Spirit of the pities, those who live even now advance. I'll see no more. Relate. Spirit of rumor, yes, those pant on. Then further Frenchmen cross, and Polish lancers, and Westphalian horse, who ring around these luckless islanders, and sweep them down like reeds by the river bank in scouring floods, till scarce a man remains. Meanwhile on the British right, Sebastiani's corps has precipitated itself in column against General Campbell's division, the division of Lapis against the center, and at the same time the hill on the English left is again assaulted. The English and their allies are pressed sorely here, the billowing battery tearing lanes through their masses. Spirit of rumor, continuing, the French reserves of foot and horse now on, smiting the islanders in breast and brain till their midlines are shattered. Now there ticks the moment of the crisis, now the next, which brings the turning stroke. Sir Arthur Wellesley sends down the 48th Regiment under Colonel Donnellan to support the wasting troops. It advances amid those retreating, opening to let them pass. Spirit of the rumor, continuing, the pales, enervated, the hitherto unflinching enemy. Lapis is pierced to death. The flagging French decline into the hollows whence they came. The two exhausted English and reduced lack strength to follow. Now the western sun, conning with unmoved visage quick and dead, gilds horsemen slackening, and footmen stilled, till all around breathes drowsed hostility. Last, the sweel derbage lifts a leering light, and flames traverse the field, and hurt and slain opposed, opposers, in a common plight are scorched together on the dusk champaign. The fire dies down, and darkness enwraps the scene. Scene by Brighton. The Royal Pavilion, it is the birthday dinner party of the Prince of Wales. In the floridly decorated banqueting room, stretch tables spread with gold and silver plate, and having artificial fountains in their midst. Seated at the tables, are the Prince himself as host, rosy, well-curled, and affable the Dukes of York, Clarence Kent, Sussex, Cumberland, and Cambridge, with many noblemen, including Lords Hertford, Berkeley, Egremont, Chichester, Dudley, Sandseal, Southampton, Heathfield, Erskine, Keith, C. Somerset, G. Cavendish, R. Seymour, and others, Sir C. Pole, Sir E. G. de Crespigny, Mr. Sheridan, generals, colonels, and admirals, and the Rev. Mr. Scott. The prince's band plays in the adjoining room. The banquet is drawing to its close, and a boisterous conversation is in progress. Enter Colonel Bloomfield with a dispatch for the prince, who looks it over amid great excitement in the company. In a few moments silence is called. Prince of Wales, I have the joy, my lords and gentlemen, to rouse you with the just imported tidings from General Wellesley through Lord Castlereagh of a vast victory, noisy cheers, over the French in Spain. The place called Talavera de Lorena, if I pronounce it rightly, long unknown, wears not the crest and blazonry of fame. Cheers. The heads and chief contents of the dispatch I read you as succinctly as I can. Cheers. Sheridan, singing sotto voce, now foreign foemen die and fly, damme, we'll drink little England dry. The prince reads the parts of the dispatch that describe the battle amid intermittent cheers. Prince of Wales, continuing, such is the substance of the news received, which, after Wagram, strikes us genially as sudden sunrise through befog nightshades. Sheridan, privately, by God, that's good, sir. You are a poet born, while the rest of us are but made, and bad at that. The health of the army in Spain is drunk with acclamations. Prince of Wales, continuing, in this achievement we, alas, have lost too many. Yet such blanks must ever be. Mackenzie, Langworth, Beckett of the Guards, have fallen of ours, while of the enemy generals Lapis and Morlet are laid low. Drink to their memories. They drink in silence. Other news, my friends, received today, is of like hopeful kind. The great war expedition to the Scheldt, cheers, which lately sailed, has found a favoring wind, and by this hour, has touched its destined shores. The enterprise will soon be hot aglow, the invaders making first the Catson coast, and then descending on Walcheren Isle. But items of the next step are withheld till later days, from obvious policy. Cheers. Faint throbbing sounds, like the notes of violoncellos and contrabassos, reach the ear from some building without as the speaker pauses. In worthy emulation of us here the county holds tonight a birthday ball, which flames with all the fashion of the town. I have been asked to patronize their revel, and sup with them, and likewise you, my guests. We have good reason, with such news to bear. Thither we haste and join our loyal friends, and stir them with this live intelligence of our staunch regiments on the Spanish plains. Applause. With them we'll now knit hands and beat the ground, and bring in dawn as we whirl round and round. There are some fair ones in their set tonight, and such we need here in our bachelor plight. Applause. The prince, his brothers, and a large proportion of the other pavilion guests swagger out in the direction of the castle assembly rooms adjoining, and the deserted banqueting hall grows dark. In a few moments the back of the scene opens, revealing the assembly rooms behind. Seen via the same. The assembly rooms, the rooms are lighted with candles in brass chandeliers, and the dance is in full movement to the strains of a string band. A signal is given, shortly after the clock has struck 11, by Mr. Forth, Master of Ceremonies.
Forth, His Royal Highness comes, though somewhat late, but never too late for welcome.
Applause.
Dancers, stand, that we may do fit homage to the prince who soon may shine our country's gracious king.
After a brief stillness, a commotion is heard at the door, the band strikes up the national air, and the prince enters, accompanied by the rest of the visitors from the pavilion. The guests who have been temporarily absent now crowd in, till there is hardly space to stand.
Prince of Wales, wiping his face and whispering to Sheridan, what shall I say to fit their feeling here? Damn me, that other speech has stumped me quite. Sheridan whispering, if he'd the evidence of loyalty, Prince of Wales, if what? Sheridan, if he'd the evidence of loyalty, et cetera, something quaint like that might please him. Prince of Wales, to the company, if he'd the evidence of loyalty, this room affords it truly without question. If he'd be not, then its accompaniment most surely tis tonight. The news I bring, good ladies, friends, and gentlemen, perchance you have divined already? That our arms engaged to thwart Napoleon's tyranny over the jaunty, jocund land of Spain even to the highest apex of our strength, are arrayed with victory. Cheers. Lengthy was the strife and fierce, and hot, and sore the suffering, but proudly we endured it, and shall hear, no doubt, of its far consequence ere many days. I'll read the details sent. Cheers.
He reads again from the dispatch amid more cheering, the ball, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.